the debt deal. Will Dick Lugar's vote come back to haunt him? Why Mike Pence voted for it and then promised to cut taxes? John Gregg makes it official. Melina Kennedy's education plan and Herman Cain's planned Indiana trip. That plus Gen Con and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending August 5, 2011.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, Congress and the President agreed on a deal to cut spending and raise the debt ceiling, and Indiana Senator Richard Lugar voted for it. His opponents are now trying to capitalize on that vote. Lugar's primary opponent, State Treasurer Richard Murdoch, picked up an endorsement from the conservative group known as Citizens United. It carries with it a $5,000 donation. But at Lugar campaign headquarters, the staff can show you a stack of papers from groups and individuals who back the senator. They include some Tea Party members, yet the Murdoch campaign posted a web video that makes it clear that the challengers think he can benefit from the Lugar vote. The video suggests that Lugar, quote, kick the can down the road. Kind of dark, kind of negative, isn't it?
I don't think it's negative to outline a vote that a sitting senator made.
It's a web video.
Which means it's not a TV commercial.
That's correct.
Is there a political price for voting for the debt deal? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Jennifer Wagner, Republican Eric Holcomb, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Eric Holcomb, did Lugar do the right thing?
Well, one vote does not a record make. There'll be a lot of votes between now and election day. But the one thing that is true is that Republicans, this vote wasn't a disagreement about principle. It was more a disagreement about strategy. Republicans en masse were for changing the conversation to spending, less spending that is, and not tax increases like Senator Reid and President Obama had encouraged going into the vote.
But Senator Dan Coats voted no at the same time that Lugar voted yes. They have the same constituency.
Yeah. Indiana's delegation was split all over the map. And again, it was more about strategy, not principle, but they both agree that spending has got to come down.
Joe Donnelly, who hopes to take on Dick Lugar, should he survive the primary against Richard Murdoch, also voted for the debt deal.
I think the issue here is less about the debt deal. I think, to Eric's point, obviously there's a lot more votes between now and next year's election. It's a huge problem for Senator Lugar. I think you saw immediately after that vote several groups come out and endorse Richard Murdoch. They are just itching to take out Senator Lugar, and I think this is going to be a huge problem for him. He put out his own poll numbers last Friday at 4:30, mind you, saying that he doesn't even have the support of the GOP primary vote in this state.
It showed that he has a 14-point lead. He's not yet to 50. He's at 45.
Right.
Right. Is this just another vote, or will this vote mean something come May?
Well, I think the vote will mean something come May, but I don't know for sure that it will mean exactly what Murdoch thinks it will mean. I think that when it comes down to final opinion about this debt ceiling vote, there's going to be discussed with everyone involved with this. I think ultimately people are going to say, look, this really did kick the can down the road. Everyone should have done a better job of striking a deal to make sure that we don't have this problem going forward. And so I don't think individually this vote is going to mean exactly what Mr. Murdoch thinks it does right now.
Well, some people think this is a make-or-break vote for Dick Lugar. I think it may also be a make-or-break vote for Richard Murdoch, because if he can't build this into the sort of momentum he needs, there are folks who are going to go looking for another horse.
You're talking about in terms of fundraising and people who read the tea leaves when they look at those finance reports. Sure, he needs to show that there is a spark here, that he is somebody who can take on a six-term incumbent and succeed. whether he has proved that to some of these deep-pocketed individuals and groups that would ostensibly be supportive of his ideology, I guess remains to be seen. But I guess there is something to that. But there's a lot on the line here, too, in terms of what the Murdoch campaign will try. There's no doubt that they will try to use this as a club that they will beat Dick Lugar with. I think what does mitigate it for Dick Lugar in terms of political damage is, as Eric suggests, this was split all over the board. And it wasn't just the moderate wing of the Republican Party on one side and the, you might say, the conservative or the Tea Party wing. I mean, Mike Pence supported it as well, who's been, you could say, a darling of the Tea Party movement. And
he's also been part of Republican leadership.
Well, I think that
we're going to get to more
right,
on that.
That may be the real reason he did it.
Sure.
But let's no accident that Dick Lugar, when he put out the statement, his office on this, it wasn't just the usual one or two paragraphs.
No.
The fourth paragraph was quoting Mike Pence about why it was important to do this, and he talks about Mitch Daniels' support of the bill in the fifth paragraph.
Sure.
He's looking clearly for cover. In terms of those who with whom he sided.
Here's a question for the state Republican chairman. As you look at this race, if Murdoch can't build the momentum he wants here, do you think Chris Ciccolo might get into this, the head of the Club for Growth, who's been playing in this, and there are indications that they'll be buying more TV ads?
Not a mind reader, but what I can tell you is the Republican message is resonating, and that is, it again changed the conversation. There's going to be a lot that unfolds in the coming months. The super committee is going to make some recommendations about entitlement reform, et cetera.
That's the super cover committee, right?
And everyone's going to have an opinion about that, too. So we'll see where people fall, Republicans and Democrats.
Okay, now, how can this be bad for Dick Lugar but not bad for Joe Donnelly?
Oh, well, Joe Donnelly doesn't have a primary challenge from a Tea Party candidate. That's it in a nutshell. I mean, Senator Lugar is well-respected. He's obviously been in the Senate for a number of terms, but he's got some guy out there on his tails, and the Tea Party's latched onto him. You know what happens next.
Still with the debt deal. The Indiana delegation to Congress was all over the map when it came to voting on the debt deal. 5 of the 9 voted no. Democrat Joe Donnelly, as I said, was for it, along with 3 Republicans. Mike Pence made a floor speech in favor of the deal.
The Budget Control Act is not so much a good deal as it is a good start. I really believe this bipartisan compromise is a modest but meaningful step in the direction of fiscal discipline and reform, and I welcome it. Now,
Jennifer Wagner, Pence came home after that vote and proposed a tax cut, a state tax cut, if he's elected governor. Do you think that was an attempt to offset the vote?
No, I actually think it was probably an accidental policy proposal he didn't mean to put out there because he'd already pledged.
That he wouldn't talk policy until after the May primary. This is clearly a policy discussion.
I think it was an idea is what his campaign was trying to spin it as. It was a very Washington idea that he brought back. It's the idea of, we'll just propose a tax cut, no idea how to pay for it, and we'll just hope that stimulates the economy.
Actually, he said that the surplus could be used to pay for it, but the surplus is under a recommended level at the moment. This is kind of a wacky idea, isn't it?
Well, he said when the reserves are at a prudent level, and Mike Pence has been talking policy since voters overwhelmingly sent him to Washington, D.C., and if you read his announcement speech, he talked policy there, too. He'll continue to talk and listen to Hoosier voters as he gets around the state. So this is nothing new. He's probably, like a lot of candidates, not going to come out with the policy binders on day 3, but, It's not unusual for Mike Pence to be advocating for lower taxes.
Well, I understand that, but to get the surplus to an adequate level, you're going to have to go past the new trigger that Mitch Daniels had installed that sends some of the money back to taxpayers. I mean, is he going to undo what Mitch Daniels did? I mean, this or how big's the surplus got to get for this to be real?
Well, I think maybe. Clearly, the notion that it was an idea is probably a good explanation because there isn't any kind of clear, thought-out reasoning at this point, or at least that has been released about how this would be implemented or what would offset the reduction in state revenue. So I think this is just sort of an early volley in the campaign, and it's reading from the script right now. I mean, that is what arguably will appeal to Republican primary voters. You know, what was it a few weeks ago, the line he was using, the spend less, the tax less, I mean, that's he's still singing from that same hymnal, really.
Schools are still complaining about cuts that they've received. Universities are complaining, state governments, employment is low. State employees haven't had raises in years. I mean, does it make sense to talk about a tax cut right now?
Well, it's a very difficult thing to talk about for all the reasons you just mentioned. You have to take in some context here. If the plan that Representative was talking about, thank you. I was thinking of McIntosh for some reason.
He used to hold that.
Yeah,
that's
his predecessor.
Welcome back from vacation.
I was thinking of the 25%, maybe. I don't know. But, you know, you look at that plan, and it's about $1 billion of revenue out of the system, all right? That is about what the governor had to cut during the recession. So if you look at that and you look at the additional $1 billion, and if you also look at this from another perspective, it doesn't matter what the reserve is, because we're talking about ongoing reductions in revenue to the state. So the reserves are, you know, there and then gone. So there are a lot of I don't think this was thought through yet. I will be surprised.
It's a high bar is what you're saying.
It's a very high bar, and it's a difficult one to clear. And so I think that they will have a plan. This just isn't it.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, does a state tax cut make sense? Your choices are A, yes, we have too much government. B, no, extra money should go to schools. Or C, a tax hike makes more sense. Last week's question was, will Jim Wallace mount a serious challenge to Mike Pence? 52% said yes, 33% said no, 15% said, who's Jim Wallace? If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. If there was any doubt that John Gregg is really running for governor, he removed it this week. The former Indiana House Speaker dropped the exploratory tag from his campaign. The only Democrat in the field, Gregg plans a formal campaign kickoff in the near future. Gregg has been traveling the state for months with no indication that he might back away from the 2012 campaign, which raises the question, John Ketzenberger, how many news hits can John Gregg generate by suggesting that he was in doubt over a run?
Ding, there's another one. You know, I mean, he has maximized the potential, I think, of this news opportunity. And so good for him and his strategy. He's got a long time to think about things and to talk about things. And Representative Pence gave him ample opportunity this week to respond to the race. So we'll be fully engaged, I think, in no time. And, you know, bring it on. It'll be an interesting campaign.
He said that the lawyers told him that he should file an exploratory committee when he started with this, when there was really little doubt what he was doing. And he got a news hit then. Now he gets a news hit now for lifting the label. He was getting some heat from Republicans who questioned what he was up to here. Do you think that had anything to do with the timing?
Not so much as just, I think, as John suggests, this is a time-honored tradition, and again, goes back to the playbook we just talked about. If you want to get as many hits out of this and as much earned media as you possibly can, do the exploratory committee, and then have the announcement. You know, the response from Hoosiers has been overwhelming. They're all but, you know, recruiting me to. I can't turn my back on these people. So that's number two, and then we'll probably, as you point out, have the rally, and then I'm guessing that's going to be followed by maybe a fly around 8 cities, the traditional.
Yeah.
And they'll all get coverage. I mean, you can't fault them for.
I hear he's going to get an Airstream and travel the city.
Well,
and
hey,
an
Airstream.
I mean,
you're so cynical.
I'm not saying he's doing anything wrong.
So
he's doing what he's. If I were running for governor, he's doing exactly what I would do.
Here's where some of the cynicism maybe comes from. Eric Holcomb, you issued a public statement this week criticizing John Gregg. You were just waiting for this opportunity, weren't you?
Well, I still have some questions, and they can be clarified, and Chairman Parker, I'm sure, will be interested in the answers as well. Look, John Gregg was a friend of mine before this campaign. He'll be a friend of mine after the campaign. I found it most humorous that he said in response that he didn't want to talk about the past, and I tried that when I brought home less than excellent report cards to my parents and my teachers and said, hey, let's look at the future, not the past. It didn't work for me, and I don't suspect it'll work for John Gregg either.
You know, we're not going to be talking about the exploratory tag 6 months from now. And I can tell you, knowing John Gregg, that it actually was, he was giving a lot of thought to this. He puts his family first. I know this is an ordeal for his sons, and he's given it a lot of thought.
He also,
so cynical.
He also, before,
no,
maybe it's an
you know what,
though.
I know, before he launched the exploratory campaign, he went to some effort to make sure that he was only the guy in the field, right?
which is a counter to the Republican field. I will say, it's like anti-2008, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think he Facebooked or tweeted or blogged his report as if that was some kind of cover. But, you know, we'll again, we've got some questions about this. And
I think it's interesting, too, that Jen is accusing people of being cynical.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am young and impressionable.
Pollyanna.
Next item.
The Democratic candidate for mayor of Indianapolis put forward an education plan this week.
Melina Kennedy believes that the job of making sure kids graduate from high school falls in part to the mayor. In a speech to the downtown Sotoma Club, she accused Republican Mayor Greg Ballard of a lack of leadership.
First, we must have a mayor who is fully engaged in public education.
We found Ballard campaigning at Forest Creek Village on the south side, where he brushed off the criticism.
I'm actually optimistic about education in the city. I really am.
But Kennedy will seek to convince voters that a mayor could help expand literacy programs and use city dollars to launch a pilot program for pre-kindergarten students.
We think it could be at least 1,000 kids, but that's to be determined over the course of looking at some other models. The important thing is we need to start.
Jobs and public safety will likely be the top issues in this race. On that, both candidates agree. If education joins them, Ballard still believes he has the high ground.
The fact that I don't get out and pontificate and get up on the high horse doesn't mean this isn't getting done.
John Schwanes, will the mayor's race swing on education issues?
It'll be a major issue. I mean, both campaigns, I think, stipulate that you're looking probably at jobs and the economy is number one, and you're looking at public safety and crime, and then and education. Those are the big three. But you could probably say that that's likely to be the primary candidates in any municipal election. So I think we know what we're going into. What may promises or may set the stage for education to be a little bit more high profile than usual, obviously, is what's unfolding with the State Department of Education and the implementation of the sort of the notion that
it's
the states
not takeover, it's turnaround.
Turnaround.
I guess turnaround schools.
It's a different T word.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's gonna, you know, the vote, large in all likelihood, will come on August 29th from the State Board of Education about how to proceed on the IPS schools that haven't performed up to snuff. And so that puts it right in the wheelhouse for these candidates to talk about.
Mayor Ballard gave an interesting response here. He said that a lot of things that she's proposing are being done, but they're being done quietly. I mean, if you're running for re-election, you need to quit being quiet about this.
You think,
right?
You'd have the Herald trumpets out with banners hanging off with your name, you know? I mean, it's an interesting situation because the mayor can directly affect public safety and the police department, can directly affect jobs by working for economic development. But in this town, the mayor has no direct say in how education is done.
Aside from charter schools.
And until that is the case, then I think it's a really a non-starter. There have been suggestions that it become a real issue by putting the schools under the mayor's office. It probably merits debate, but nobody has put that on the
table
yet.
Melina Kennedy says she's not for that, but she criticizes the mayor for taking it off the table. She says maybe it should be considered down the road.
And you know what? And we go round and round and round, and nothing happens with it. So it needs to be a real issue, but until the mayor has a direct stake in this, then it's not it's something they can affect.
So, Jennifer, tell me how this is different from something that many of us criticized years ago when Evan Bayh was Secretary of State and running for governor. When he was running for Secretary of State, he tried to make education an issue, something that the Secretary of State clearly has nothing to do about, but it's something voters care about.
I think this goes to the issue of leadership more than anything. This is an issue that people care about. Nothing was more important in this most recent legislative session than education reform. The governor talked about it, Dr. Bennett talked about it, and now Molina's talking about it. And every time he's asked, Mayor Ballard previously said, that's not my problem, I'm not going to talk about it, I don't have any control over it. And she's saying, let's start the conversation. She's putting some ideas out there, whether or not they get traction, whether or not they go anywhere. You know, that's going to be up to a number of different organizations and entities. But she's starting the conversation, which is more than he's done.
Is he running a good campaign?
Well, I agree with Jennifer. This is about leadership, and this is one of those classic cases of, I think, Melina Kennedy is a candidate in search of an issue at this late stage of the game. We just had, as Jennifer alluded to, a great debate on education at the State House. Melina Kennedy was absent, silent from that. Mayor Ballard has an excellent record when it comes to this issue, so you know, her big idea was to create a czar for education, where, surprise, surprise, and then to kind of dip into the infrastructure fund and spend that on something other than it was intended to. So, you know, this is not an issue that I think is going to get any traction for her campaign.
You question the issue she raises, but this is one of the second of four policy addresses she plans to make. Meantime, we're not seeing anything on a policy level from the Ballard campaign. Should we?
Yeah, his record speaks for itself, and he's got a good record on that front. And his strength comes from that neighborhoods up, not necessarily the trumpets and the banners being. If you rewind the tape and look at how he won the first campaign, I bet you former Mayor Bart Peterson wasn't very critical that there weren't any trumpets and balloons and.
You mean the mayor who started the charter schools initiative that Ballard now takes credit for?
I salute him for it.
Yeah, I think that election was a referendum on Bart Peterson. I don't think.
What was it you called him? What was it?
The accidental mayor. Thank you. Several weeks back, Eric Holcomb invited Republican presidential candidates to come to Indiana to campaign. He just got the first RSVP. Herman Cain, the former CEO of Godfather's Pizza, will come to Indianapolis in 10 days. He will meet with supporters and others at Republican state headquarters. Cain, by the way, is a Purdue graduate. Eric, will this be the best look we get at the GOP nomination fight in 2012?
The Cain train is coming to Indy. This will be one of many looks that you'll get, and this really shows the energy and excitement that Republicans have going into not just this November but next. We put out.
Does it show that, or does it show that Herman Cain will go anywhere to raise a little money?
Well, I hope that all the candidates come to Indiana. That's why I sent the invitation to all of them. And within 24, 48 hours, we had about 300 RSVPs. So we'll get
300 RSVPs to the Cain visit.
That's correct.
Yeah. I just want to make sure folks understand that you don't have 300 presidential candidates coming.
Did I hear Harold Trump is
here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we've got another one confirmed, and we'll announce that after the Cain visit.
Who is it?
Well, we'll announce that after the Cain visit.
Male or female?
Male.
reports that the Obama campaign is going to write off Indiana.
I don't think that's true at all. I think they've still got a very strong OFA presence here, and I can tell you,
Organizing for America, which is the organization that was created from his last campaign.
Right. And I can tell you, as someone who stops by a state party once in a while, there are always people there making phone calls for the president. It's not died down. The energy is still there, and I think, a guy who's going to raise $1 billion, I think there'll be some significant investments.
Why would Herman Cain come to Indiana at this stage?
I think you answered it earlier. To raise money and to gain exposure, and if he gets that opportunity, then he's going to take it. With Harold Trumpets blazing, I might add.
Or at least a single bugle. I don't know how many trumpets are expensive. That could cut into the profit here.
Yeah, only if you hire professionals.
2012 is not shaping up to be 2008 in Indiana.
No, and I'm sure that's much to the dismay of
certainly
television stations, people in the media who either report on these things or who earn money from the placement of television spots. It was a very good year in 2008, probably not shaping up to be as good a year. It'd be a good news year, but not as profitable in terms of candidates crisscrossing the state. Barack Obama came here, 48 times in 2008, which is unheard of. Usually it's right. It's the cousin of a potential first lady's neighbor, and that's the surrogate who comes through. And that,
right.
And traditionally in Indiana, that's about all you'd
Trafalgar.
Get.
Yeah.
So how many are you going to get?
We'll get a handful or so.
Five or six.
We'll get a handful or so, yeah.
All right. Finally, tens of thousands of gamers are in Indianapolis this week. Gen Con is a convention that gives people a chance to meet those in the gaming industry and check out the latest electronic games. It's a convention that brought $26 million into the local economy last year, as well as some unusual sights on downtown street corners. Indianapolis has signed a deal to hold Gen Con through 2015. Jennifer Wagner, what's better, Gen Con or the NFL Combine?
Gen Con, hands down.
Are those kids Republicans or Democrats, do you think?
I know they make me look cool, and that's all I care about. Because that's a pretty low bar.
Huh? Big nerd factor.
Everyone's welcome and encouraged to travel to Indianapolis, even people from other galaxies.
They look like Republicans?
independent-minded people, I think.
I'm surprised that didn't draw the other nine Republican presidential invitees. I mean, you would think that that's right. I mean, that's potential votes right there.
I think we should go down to Mos Eisley and have a beer.
Yeah. Is that a better show than the State Fair this weekend?
Wow. That's a good question. I haven't been to the fair yet, so I'll have to go look.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Jennifer Wagner, Republican Eric Holcomb, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.